how kindness makes us happy. A very old idea, at least as old as the Torah, the story of Cain and Abel. We learn the opposite. Unkindness can make you pretty miserable. But it's an interesting an exchange of questions, actually, between God and Cain. As if he didn't know, God asks, "Where's your brother?" And Cain, like a teenager, says, "Hey, am I my brother's keeper?" And God doesn't give an answer to that, but it's kind of clear from what happens next that the answer is yes, because Cain is cast out and forced to wander, so that his life is at risk with every stranger that he meets. Jesus said, "Love your neighbor as yourself." That's one of my favorite quotations from the Bible, particularly because of how easy it is to give that different interpretations. And I think the one that's most common, at least that I remember from Sunday school, was love your neighbor as much as yourself. Don't put yourself higher than others. But being a Buddhist, I read it as really as yourself. Love your neighbor, knowing that there's no separation between you, that you and all others are totally interconnected, so that we're one together. This is the doctrine of dependent co-arising. It's a kind of a complex name for a very complex idea, which is that everything that is depends on everything else that is in this moment. So that whatever it is that I am comes from past causes and conditions into this moment, where I support the process of everything else existing. And each phenomenon appears to be separate, but it isn't, are interrelated through history and what's going on right now. To look at it in simple terms, how food gets into your refrigerator. It takes so many different labors to bring it into being, to bring it to your store or your farmer's market. For you to go get it, there's a car or a bicycle that you use, somebody put that together. It's all dependent on everything else. I love the idea of, you know, love your neighbor as yourself, because we're utterly interdependent. Going back to the divine being concept, it's definitely comforting to think that if we're kind, then we will be blessed by a supreme power. And thinking that might motivate good behavior in people. But then take a look at the news or human history, and it doesn't seem like it really works that well. Most religions do stress kindness. And in truth, kindness will lead to wholesome acts and the consequences of those acts may be beneficial to me, aside from that I'm not going to go to hell or be reborn as a cockroach. And some of these consequences may be that people will love me if I'm kind to them. I might earn a good reputation, and I might eventually get help from other people. And lots of other things, you never know. You sow the seeds and things come back. But these are all intermediary causes. There's the Supreme Being, there's the fact that people might appreciate my being kind. But I'm talking about the direct cause and effect of being kind and being happy. So that you don't need someone to appreciate what you've done. Just doing it, just feeling it is enough to make us happy. So recently, science has been exploring this very cause and effect relationship between kindness and happiness. And a lot of them use Buddhist practices as part of their experiment. I'll talk about one study that did that. It's called The Biology of Kindness, How It Makes Us Happier and Healthier. And this is by Maya Tsalovets in 2013. Her study focused on the vagus nerve. I did a little reading up on it, and I've come to think of it as the brain's bureaucracy. There's, you know, the brain, and then it goes throughout the body, just like a good bureaucrat, and tells everything what to do. It controls the heart and lung functions, the development or end of inflammation in the body, our glucose level, the immune system, and not least, our emotions, the vagus nerve. And I'll quote, in addition, and relevant to the study, the author said, the vagus is intimately tied to how we connect with one another. It links directly to nerves that tune our ears to human speech, coordinate eye contact with other people, and regulate emotional expressions. Isn't that interesting? This is an aside on my part, that our facial expressions showing what we're feeling are universal. You look at any human being and you know what they're feeling. Vagus nerve tells us how to do that. And I'll go on with a quote. It influences the release of oxytocin, a hormone that's important in social bonding. We get that rush of oxytocin. We like people. It's a good feeling. Studies have found that higher vagal tone is associated with greater closeness to others and more altruistic behavior. And I think I'll get into the vagal tone notion a little more later. But let me tell you about the experiment. There were two groups, one that used metta practice for about 61 days, and then the other, the control group, didn't do metta practice. They were told that soon or later, they were going to be put into a class to do metta practice. So this test group, the one that was doing the metta, was told to do the phrases and to think about what makes other people happy. and also to think about this when they're in stressful moments, like when there's traffic or a conflict with someone. And the result was, no surprise to us, that the vagus nerve was actually in better shape at the end of this 2-month period. And they do have a way of finding out. It never occurred to me that such a large nerve could be toned, but it can be, kind of like the strings on a musical instrument. And they can tell whether or not it's well toned by the variability in the heart rate. And if it's a certain pattern, then they can tell that the vagus nerve is working well. So the people who did the meta had a better toned vagus nerve, which controls all those things, happiness and what we think of as health as something separate. So I'll go on with a quote from the author of this study. More of the meditators than those on the waiting list showed an overall increase in positive emotions like joy, interest, amusement, serenity, and hope. And these emotional and psychological changes were correlated with a greater sense of connectedness to others, as well as to an improvement in vagal function, particularly those whose vagal tone was already high at the start of the study, which to me implies that this happiness can build on itself. So there's another study which emphasized, instead of just thinking about kindness, actually doing something about it, acting on kindness. And this is actually my experience and my observation in talking to other people that, and actually it's similar to what karma, the principle of karma. So you have an intention and you act on it, it has an actual impact on your future. It's going to help determine how your future unfolds. And my own experience is I get more of a bang out of actually doing something kind than thinking about it. If you've got time to do metta meditation, definitely it's a good thing to do. Tones the vagus nerve. This study divided people into 4 groups. One was instructed to do kind things for themselves, like taking a nice warm bath or getting some Häagen-Dazs ice cream or whatever. And then another group, group 2, was to do kind acts toward others. Group 3, do kind things for the world. And 4, just keep a journal of your activities. Only groups 2 and 3, those who practice kindness toward others, either individuals or the whole world, quote, demonstrated increases in positive emotions from 1 week to the next. This research does not say that we shouldn't treat ourselves, show ourselves self-love when we need it or enjoy our relaxation when we have it. However, the results of this study strongly suggest that we are more likely to reach greater levels of happiness when we exhibit pro-social behavior and show others kindness through our actions. So that's the science of it. And I never know, you know, really how scientific it is. My friend Rick Hansen has written a number of books about the neuroscience of being happy and how Buddhism works. And I think I've quoted him in the past about how Buddha never got to look under the hood of the car the way neuroscientists can these days. But he still knew how it ran. He still understood what made the car go. And Buddhist teachings draw a direct causal connection between kindness and happiness. And it's in the Eightfold Path, which I talked about last time I was here. The goal of the Eightfold Path is to end suffering, or dukkha. You follow this path, you get happy. The first part of the Eightfold Path, the wisdom aspect, is wise understanding and wise intention. And the wise understanding, it's the Four Noble Truths. There is suffering. It's caused by clinging. It can be ended. And the Eightfold Path is the way to end it. And then also karma, that effects have causes. There's a real link between a cause and an effect. In other words, you put these two together and you become what you do intentionally. My way of interpreting that is you condition your thinking by what you actually act on. If you act it out, it's more real. It engages the whole nervous system. It's a concrete memory. And you're training your mind to work that way in the future. So in traditional Buddhism, it's about being reborn in a new body. But it can work without multiple lifetimes, that you're actually becoming a different person. When you act on kind intentions or unkind intentions, you kind of shrink and get stressed when you're unkind, when you act that way, and you expand and feel calm when you act on good intentions, kindness. So the second fold of the Eightfold Path is having a wise intention. And that is traditionally non-harming. Don't do things out of unkindness. Don't do things to hurt people. But the flip side of this is do things that are kind. If you have an opportunity to help someone, go for it. So this kindness is the underlying intent of all that we do when we're being wise. So the next aspect of the Eightfold Path is ethics. And you want to do things that are ethical because it'll avoid bad karma and it'll make good karma. Kind of what I was just talking about. It'll make you a better, happier person. And then in the practice part of the Eightfold Path, wise effort, you will start to reduce the number of unkind thoughts that you have, thoughts that lead you into behavior that you're going to regret, because you're using mindfulness and concentration to get off repetitive thoughts of not being kind, being angry, being resentful, having ill will, you know, greed, hatred, delusion, that sort of thing. So you end that cycle in your mind. So you see, like these two studies, Buddhism pays attention to the thought, the power of the thought, but also the power of the deed, how we act in physical movement, the body, and communication, and how we interact economically with the rest of the world. So it's wise speech, wise action, and wise livelihood. So what does this mean about daily life? It means just considering other people's, other beings' happiness as we engage in our lives. And, you know, one of the things that I do every day is walk around my neighborhood, and I may not know the names of my neighbors, but I know the names of their pets. And those animals just love to be petted. Not all of them, but the ones that come running up, you know, there's a little orange cat that ambushes us as we're walking by. And it's this wonderful sharing of affection that my wife and I have with this animal. So all beings respond to kindness, and our being kind to any of them creates a feeling that's just as happy as if we're stroking a cat or a dog. Part of that feeling of happiness when we make a connection is that it makes us realize that we're not alone in this universe. We're not separate. You know, that interconnectedness that I talked about a while ago, it's so easy to think that we're imprisoned within our own skin and forget about how we connect with other beings. So when we are kind, we break down that sense of isolation. And it can be very oppressive. When I allow myself to fall into me, 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 I'm not happy. But when I'm thinking us, I'm a lot happier. Well, you might ask at this point, since I've been talking about how good it is to be kind, what if you're not naturally kind? And I would say, probably not, because I've watched children out on the playground. I remember being a young child on the playground, and one of most young children's favorite words is mine, and there can be a lot of belligerence among young human beings and some real cruelty. It doesn't come naturally to us to be considerate of other people's feelings. So, in Buddhism, we talk about cultivating positive mind states. Cultivate metta and compassion and sympathetic joy. They're all fairly synonymous with kindness. You know, when you're feeling kindly towards someone and they're happy, you're happy. That's sympathetic joy. Or when they're unhappy, you feel compassion. You can be outright unhappy if you don't bring in equanimity, and that's the fourth divine abode. So it's loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and what balances them all out is equanimity. Going back to the ethics aspect of the Eightfold Path, they're all kindness in action, really. When we consider how is my speech going to affect the person who's listening or reading my email. When we don't consider that, we can get ourselves into a whole lot of trouble, particularly if we accidentally click on reply all. Thinking about the effect that it's going to have on other people and having the intention that it have a positive effect and make them happy frees us from our own dukkha, our own sense of separation, so that we can consider in advance the effect that our engagement in the world is going to have. So there's this snowballing effect. I think I've mentioned it earlier. The more we do, you know, that one study, if you're already a kind, happy person with good vagal tone, it's going to improve even more as you keep doing it. Most of the time when I'm talking about practice, I'm talking about ending your own dukkha, and that as an end in itself. And it really is important to address that kind of first, so that you can then be clear-headed and open-hearted enough to be kind to others. But it's all part of the same thing. It's the intention and the action and the clarity of mind and heart to form that intention in the first place. I recently had a midweek retreat up in the mountains that was kind of magical, and there were a couple of breakthroughs that I had. And one was actually on the drive there. It was a 4-hour drive, and I've been practicing mindful driving for a quarter century now, and I realized that my primary intention for this 4-hour drive the whole time was to drive for the well-being of everyone on the road, all of us. And I really enjoyed that drive, all 4 hours of it. And usually, you know, over this 25 years of practicing, you know, my dominant intention at times is to get where I'm going, like, as soon as possible. And why are you going so slowly? Why didn't you signal that turn so I knew I could go around you? You know, just a lot of thought that wasn't really kind. And I had 4 hours of not having to go there. And it was wonderful. Like I said, it was a magical retreat. And I've noticed since I've been back that this has kind of continued. So who knows? You know, meat, grocery lines are going to be next. We'll see. We'll see if it lasts. Very little acts can have a wonderful rate of return, such as just smiling, saying hello to people, paying attention to their interests. And then there are the kinds of acts of kindness that we have to invest a little in, like saying yes to rides to and from the airport or to and from the hospital, which can often involve some serious wait time, going and visiting the sick, letting a friend tell you about their heartache. So the point is not whether or not it helps them. It really isn't. That's a lesson I learned over and over again working in the hospice. I'm not going to keep them from dying. I'm not going to serve them the perfect cup of tea that's going to make their day. The point was, I was doing something kind for them. And very often it wasn't even I who was acting. I was acting as part of a team of volunteers that, I mean, sometimes it took five of us to get one person their tea because we'd be interrupted so much. We'd be called over to help someone over there and pass that cup of tea on to the next volunteer, go take it to bed 9. So it's just doing what we can in any minute with the intention of may this person be happy. It's a living meta. And it affects us in all ways. Not to go back to the vagus nerve, but in Buddha's teachings, in the suttas, it affects our bodily health, our sense of wholesome well-being. There's a short sutta in which the bhikkhus, or the monks, asked Buddha if there were any thoughts that it was okay to dwell on. And he said, yes, your own goodness. And for me, this has come to mean the times when I have been kind. When I act out of kindness, no matter how humble the action is, I try to let those feelings in the moment just suffuse my whole being. I try to really absorb what it feels like. At the moment, I'm not thinking, what a great Buddhist I am. I'm just trying to feel the sensations as they ripple through my body. And it's really delightful. Over the decades of my practice, my sense of self has shifted. I rarely anymore think of myself in compared to what I think I ought to be. I'm becoming more comfortable just thinking, feeling, acting without judging it, just being. And not even being who I am, just acting in the world. And when I do think of what I am, it can often be in pretty judgmental, deprecating terms. But if I intentionally decide to think about how much kindness there is in me, those self-critical thoughts will recede. And people that I've helped over time have, some of them have made a point of thanking me for it. And that's always welcome. It's great to think that, in fact, this thing that I did basically for my own benefit also benefited them. And it's especially true when their Dharma practice has played a part, when it's what I've done as a Dharma teacher, that I'm being told it helped. this is the greatest kindness that's possible, to help others to be free from suffering and truly happy. And we don't need to be acting as Dharma teachers to do it. We don't have to be sitting up in front of other people or in a practice review. Just living with a kind heart is like carrying a beacon through the world that can guide all beings toward freedom. Thank you.